It's been a stormy few weeks at the National Hurricane Center in Miami. The center's director is on leave after a staff revolt. That's the hot topic this week on Jet Streaming. Inside, I'm tired. And thanks for joining us again. I'm Kathy Werzer, and you found Jet Streaming. That's a podcast devoted to news of the weather and climatology and the people who are involved in forecasting and research. Boy, this has been a busy week. Joining us right now, Mark Seely from the University of Minnesota Climatology Department and Minnesota Public Radio meteorologist Paul Huttner. Hi, guys.
Hey, Kathy.
Hello, Kathy.
Good to have you on board again. Let's jump right in and talk about the big news involving the National Hurricane Center. As you probably know, the director, Bill Proenza, has stepped aside, taking a leave of absence. He's only been on the job for, a few months, I believe, about 6 months or so. And many of his staffers demanded he be fired because they say he's undermined the public's confidence in the Hurricane Center's forecasting ability. How big of a deal is this? We want to find out, so we've called Jeff Masters. He's the chief meteorologist for the Weather Underground. That's a firm that provides forecasts for a number of clients like the Associated Press, Google, and other firms. Jeff, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. I'm doing quite well, thanks.
Well, you're one of those who has called for Proenza's resignation or firing. Why is that?
Well, this is a big deal. In order to be the director of the National Hurricane Center, you have to be straight with the public and give them the best scientific understanding that we have about the science of hurricane forecasting. And I believe that wasn't done in this case, and so does the senior staff of the National Hurricane Center.
Say, Jeff, this is Mark Seely. I realize that the National Hurricane Center is probably one of the most visible entities within NOAA, and certainly it's extremely important to maintain confidence, public confidence in that organization. Do you have a sense for, he came from the Southern Region headquarters, is that not correct?
Yeah, that's correct. He was the first director to come from outside of the Hurricane Center or the Associated Research Division with NOAA. So all the other directors in the past were scientists that had come from kind of the inside group there. So he was the first one from the outside. He did not have a strong scientific background. He has a bachelor's degree in meteorology, and he did do some hurricane work back in the 60s. But since then, he's been more in a management role. And the reason he was appointed to the job was pretty much to go out and go to bat for the National Hurricane Center to get more funding for them.
I see. So, it couldn't help but cross my mind that coming in from the outside, perhaps there was a little, hesitancy or animosity bringing an outsider in among the staff there. I don't know whether that came into play, but it appeared to me that there was not only the criticism about his being an outspoken critic in terms of the technology and the danger of losing some of the technology, notably QuickSCAT, the satellite system, but there was something underlying that is what I sensed from what I read, that there was a little bit of concern among the staff there, particularly some of the long-standing staff at the NHC.
Well, I think the main issue was that he did not have a strong science background, so he should have relied on the expertise of his senior forecasters, particularly in regards to this QuickSCAT issue, which you mentioned. Now, he made some comments both to the public and to Congress that this QuickSCAT satellite is important, and if it fails, we would have a 10% degradation in the forecast at 48 hours. Now, it is true that the QuickSCAT satellite is very important, but it is just one of our tools that we use to do hurricane forecasts, and the science does not support what he was saying about the percentage degradation in the forecast should it fail. And I think that was the concern of the scientific staff there, and I think they were justified in bringing up this difference with them.
Jeff, Paul Huttner here. Good day to you. I've talked to some folks in the Weather Service, and the feedback I get is that Mr. Proenza is really sort of a political animal, and of course politics transcends all organizations. He came in there, he ruffled some feathers by not using channels, by using the media to actually try to cast a negative light and create change that was beneficial to the National Hurricane Center, at least in his view. And what is your sense of his background and the whole politics of that situation?
Well, yeah, he is a politician, and he was using his skills the best way he thought in order to bring about change. And I do applaud some of the things he did and said. He was very outspoken. He criticized NOAA upper management for blowing millions of dollars on a what he called bogus birthday party. He criticized them for wanting to change the name of the National Hurricane Center to the NOAA Hurricane Center. So his outspokenness did have some positive features. But at the same time, he was careless. And he really needed to work better with the scientific staff at the Hurricane Center to make his politics net positive. And it just didn't work out, his approach.
I want to go back to QuickSCAT, the weather satellite, for just a second here. Now, QuickSCAT is past its prime, though, right, Jeff?
It should have failed 5 years ago.
So, really, some of his comments are accurate in a sense, are they not?
They are. The QuickSCAT satellite should have been on the board to be replaced years and years ago. And he was right to criticize NOAA's management for not taking steps to replace the satellite. It's key, especially for where we don't have the hurricane hunters, like, for instance, in the Pacific Ocean, and for making marine forecasts out over the open waters where there isn't any other data. But his mistake was saying that the QuickSCAT satellite was overly important for the storms we care about most in the U.S. Those are the hurricanes making landfall. In that case, we have other sources of data, and it's unclear whether failure of the QuickSCAT satellite would make a worse forecast for a storm hitting the U.S. coast. I don't think it would.
Jeff, on a brighter note, from what I've read, it appears that not only the staff but the public have a lot of confidence in Ed Rappaport, the fellow that's been appointed to succeed Bill and run the organization for a period of time. Is that your perception as well?
Well, yeah. He was the person that everyone wanted to take over the directorship last year when it became available, but he didn't want the job because of family reasons. So he's beginning to question that decision, I'm sure, now, because here he is stuck with a job and things are in a much worse shape over there. But he is an excellent choice. He is, without a doubt, the best person on the planet to take over directorship of the NHC.
But how much has all the turmoil affected the work at the National Hurricane Center, do you think?
Well, I'm sure it's affected it quite a bit. They have a stressful job over there because not only do they have the burden of being responsible for protecting the lives and property of millions of people, they have to do that in a really stressful environment, rotating shift work and working all night long and during intense storms like Katrina and Rita. It makes for a very, very difficult job. But fortunately, so far, this season has not been a repeat of 2005. I mean, here we are into mid-July, and we really haven't had much to speak of out there. And by this point in 2005, we'd already had Hurricane Dennis, which is a Category 4 storm, hit the U.S., and Hurricane Emily had already formed as well.
You know, getting back to QuickSCAT, if that's scrapped, what are some meteorologists and forecasters hoping that the National Hurricane Center will get somewhere in the future?
Well, there are other QuickSCAT-like satellites that other nations are putting up and have put up. In fact, the Europeans just put up a satellite called ASCAT, which has a similar instrument on it. It's not as effective as QuickSCAT as far as its coverage area. It only covers 60% of the globe, and its resolution is only half of what QuickSCAT's is. It sees down to 25-kilometer resolution, whereas QuickSCAT was 12.5 kilometers. But that's a great new tool that they have to work with now. And in addition, the Indians and the Chinese are scheduled to put up scatterometers in the near future. But that being said, there are plans to put up more satellites, particularly polar orbiting satellites, which have these kinds of instruments. And there's a hearing today on Capitol Hill to talk about where the future of the national satellite program is headed. And there will be new satellites sent up that have QuickSCAT-like capability and can help with the hurricane intensity problem, which is what we really need to start tackling.
But you disagree that the loss of QuickSCAT would diminish the accuracy of the 2 and 3 day forecast, which is what Bill Parenza maintains.
That's correct.
Okay.
QuickSCAT is most important for those storms out over the open ocean, and it can also help us with the intensity question, which is something he didn't address. I think QuickSCAT potentially could be quite helpful for improving intensity forecasts.
Jeff, you touched on so far it's been very quiet this hurricane season. June, early July, normally the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean, we kind of see storms firing there. That's been almost non-existent. We'll now turn our attention further east to the Cape Verde season, where the storms come off of Africa and cross the open Atlantic. What's your feeling? Of course, Dr. Bill Gray, some of the forecasters still have us as a more active than average hurricane season. What's your feeling? Are we sort of breathing a sigh of relief here, or are we waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Well, I'm breathing a sigh of relief that this is not a repeat of 2005. By this time in 2005, things were already, you know, really getting cranked up. So that's one sigh of relief. But still, we shouldn't celebrate prematurely here. For instance, 2004 hurricane season, when we had four major hurricanes and three of them hitting Florida, that didn't get going until pretty much the 1st of August. So it's too early, really, to be breathing a big sigh of relief, because the busy part of hurricane season is still ahead. We still have low wind shear out there over the Atlantic. Sea surface temperatures are a little above normal. So I think we're going to get an above-active hurricane season, but probably not the huge activity that Bill Gray and some of the others are forecasting. I'm tending to believe more the United Kingdom Met Office forecast, which is calling for a total of 12 named storms this season.
Well, we'll see if that happens. Jeff, it's really been fun talking to you. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome, Kathy.
That's Jeff Masters, chief meteorologist with the Weather Underground, talking about the controversy over the director of the National Hurricane Center in Miami.
It's raining so hard. Look like it's going to rain.
Wildfires are scorching acres of land in Arizona, but there may be some relief coming in a big way. Now, you've worked in Tucson, Arizona, Paul Huttner.
Yes, I have.
And folks like you wait eagerly this time of the year.
They are waiting with bated breath for what's called the summer monsoon down in the southwestern United States. It's a season there that brings them about half of their annual rainfall. It keeps the desert in that part of the world kind of a lush green during the summer. And the term monsoon itself comes from the Arabic word mawsim, which means season, and it refers to that seasonal shift in mid-level tropospheric winds from the northwest to the southeast in that part of the world that brings them that those beneficial rains in summer.
Well, now a person who's watching to see when the monsoon season starts, or maybe is it already started officially as we speak?
Well, we're going to find out.
Okay.
We have Aaron Christensen from KGUN9, a chief meteorologist in Tucson, Arizona, the ABC affiliate down there. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing great. Where are we at? Folks may not know, but it's to get the monsoon started, there's a measurement, a criteria where three consecutive days the average daily dew point has to be 54 degrees or higher, because that's kind of an indication of that the winds have shifted and that they're transporting moisture into the desert southwest. Aaron, where do we stand with that right now?
Yesterday was day number three, so we are officially at day four of monsoon, because as you know, Paul, the start goes back to the first day. We had that 54 degree average daily dew point.
All right. The term monsoon, we talked a little bit about it. It's a little bit controversial down in that part of the southwest.
Controversial.
It is, believe it or not. Some folks don't believe it's a true monsoon. They object to the term. Aaron, tell us what's going on with that right now.
Well, you know, I mean, that's so true. I hear from viewers all the time who say, how dare you call this a monsoon? I mean, you want to talk about monsoon, let's talk about the Indian monsoon, where, you know, flooding rains will wash out villages every single day because they have 9 feet deep, you know, rivers running through the streets kind of thing. But I think the major problem that comes from this topic is that people just do not understand the true meaning of monsoon. It's seasonal shift of winds, and undeniably here in the desert southwest, we get that. And sure, they get that in India too. The difference is the outcome is a lot more torrential there from what it is here with the Mexican monsoon.
Aaron, Mark Seeley here. I think you hit on a key point for public perception of this. Monsoon isn't monsoon. You need to pay attention to what area of the globe you're talking about. I was wondering, in the Indian monsoon context, of course, they can get rainfall rates of 4, 5, or 6 inches per hour associated with that season, and they can also get dew points of 80 to 85 degrees. What in the Tucson area would you consider extremes for rainfall rates or extreme dew points during the monsoon season?
Gosh, in terms of the rainfall, I mean, we consider it a seriously wet day if we get anywhere from 2 to 3 inches of rain in a 24-hour period.
That's substantial, though.
Well, for us it is, because the runoff is just so quick. You know, the ground here cannot absorb it. And with the growth, of course, that we've had in Tucson and in Phoenix, we just get flash flooding so much quicker from even 10 years ago.
I would presume then, Aaron, that any rain you get is going to go a long way in helping some of those wildfires, I would think.
Absolutely. As long as we get the rain without the dry lightning, that's another concern that we have. As the monsoon is, you know, just kind of gearing up, we oftentimes will get dry thunderstorms, which that's one of the reasons that we've had so many wildfires spark just in the last couple of weeks. We've had two in the Catalina Mountains. We've had several in the Rincons. Now we've got the one that is threatening the observatory at the top Kitt Peak. But, you know, it does look as though things are turning. The atmosphere has changed over us. It is a lot soupier, if you will, from what it was just 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, they are really keeping their fingers crossed for monsoon. You know, a topic that Paul in particular will be interested in is that yesterday the National Weather Service actually came up with basically what they want to do for next year and every year after is do away with the term monsoon, and they want to call it summer thunderstorm season. And there are a lot of people out here who have, you know, some issues with that.
Yeah, absolutely right. And, of course, I dealt with that for the last 9 years, too. There is a split in what people want to call it, and they're very – there's an ownership to the monsoon. And I'm curious, Aaron, because I've been through this, kind of explain to Mark and Kathy, what's the feeling of people in Tucson and Arizona at this time of the year after a hot, dry June, the anticipation, the reverence for what's ahead with our summer monsoon?
It is like staying up on Christmas Eve waiting for Santa Claus to arrive. It's true. I mean, the giddiness, the excitement, and, you know, this is one of my concerns, because part of what the National Weather Service is proposing is they want to do with the whole dew point criteria start, you know, what we had talked about a little bit ago. And I think that's a shame, because so many people count on that. I know a lot of folks don't like the word dew point, and having to explain it, what it means, why that is the official, you know, start of monsoon, over and over for some of us in the media can get, you know, tiresome. But on the same, you know, factor, I mean, we really look forward to counting that number down. Okay, you know, we've jumped from the 30s now to the upper 40s. Oh, my, the lower 40s can't, or 50s can't be much far behind, you know. And then, okay, we're at 51. When's that first 54 coming kind of thing? It's just excitement.
By the way, what's the highest dew point reading you can get during monsoon?
Well, whatever the surface temperature is, basically, as long as you cool the air to the dew point temperature, that means that air can, to the actual air temperature, it can be 100% saturated.
Yeah, I've seen dew points there often high 60s,
okay.
Low 70s. I don't think
absolutely.
I've ever seen anything as high as 80. So Mark's point is very well taken, that it's not the intensity of moisture they get in India and places like that, but it's plenty humid and enough to bring some beneficial rainfall.
Well, and the thing that kind of disturbs me about the National Weather Service wanting to change this, and I don't know if you caught this point either, Paul, but what they now want to do is just have the start of it June 1st through September 30th. Any rain that falls during that time is then just considered summer thunderstorm season rain. And, you know, I know part of the issue that the National Weather Service has is the same thing that we as broadcast meteorologists have, is trying to explain to the public what monsoon means, why the term monsoon season is actually redundant. And I just see it as though they've kind of thrown their hands up in the air and they've said, you know what, we're tired of explaining it. Even though we technically do have a monsoon here, so many people don't understand it. So many people don't want to call it that. So you know what? We'll just make it easier for the general public, call it summer thunderstorm season. And that's kind of what bugs me.
Yeah, that's not fun. That's just kind of so generic. Summer thunderstorm season.
It is.
I know.
Is.
What's next? Do we call tornadoes whirligigs?
Yeah, right.
No, I don't know.
No, by the way, it's not monsoons, plural. It's just monsoon.
Well, unless you're talking about like monsoon of 2000, monsoon of 2001, monsoon of 2002. You know, that would be monsoons.
And of course, locally there, Aaron, the local vernacular, most of the people call the individual storms monsoons, and that's not the case either. Monsoon refers to the season as a whole.
Exactly. I mean, I get a lot of folks who will stop me. You know, I go to the gym or the grocery store or something, and they'll say, oh, it was fantastic. The monsoons hit my house last night. And, you know, and I understand that part of our job is to explain, you know, what exactly that means and why that's not necessarily accurate. But on the other hand, I'm thrilled that they're so excited about getting rain. And we actually had a poll on our website last night. We asked viewers to respond to this. You know, would you support the name change? And overwhelmingly, people did not want to change it.
Well, Aaron, I know everybody's looking forward to the rain down there. There's an old saying in Tucson in the Southwest, you're as welcome as rain, because everybody wants the rain down there. And you're as welcome as rain on this show anytime. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it. Kathy, nice talking with you guys. Dr. Seeley, everybody, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
That's Aaron Christensen, the chief meteorologist with Kagan TV in Tucson, Arizona. She's delightful. That was really interesting. I learned the things you learn on jet streaming.
It's a slice of life that most people are not familiar with, so we're glad to bring it to you.
So we're talking monsoon. I want to say monsoons, but that's not correct. We're talking about the monsoon season and hurricane season, and we're going to continue this theme here with a podcast listener question. And Mark Seeley, you can answer this if you would, please. This listener wants to know, I have heard that hurricanes cannot form until the sea surface temperatures reach 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Is this true? And what is the current temperature in the Gulf of Mexico?
Yes, indeed, it is true. In fact, several generations of researchers have established this. It's very much used by the National Weather Service that continuously monitors sea surface temperatures. In order to initiate deep convection over the tropical oceans, you do need an ocean surface temperature of about 80 degrees. And it has to be of a certain depth. It cannot be a shallow layer, but it has to be a fairly substantial layer. This has been established over many decades. Currently, as we look at the NOAA sites that show what the sea surface temperatures are, we find anywhere from 84 to 88 degrees is dominant in the Gulf of Mexico, and 82 to 84 degrees is dominant in the Atlantic Ocean. So we have both of those bodies of water that currently exceed that minimum and therefore should not be an inhibitor when it comes to formation of tropical storms or hurricanes. Of course, Kathy, there's many other features of the atmosphere that go into the formation of a hurricane, and this is but one of them. But we already know conditions are favorable for their formation based on the current ocean surface temperatures.
Mm, good question. Good answer, by the way. And if you have a question for our weather experts, I do not count myself among the experts here, feel free. We have a special form to fill out at minnesotapublicradio.org. Well, let us move on to the weather website of the week. A thunder roll, please. Thunderclap, I guess that would be. Nice that we have the power to request a thunderclap when we want it. Don't you think that's kind of cool?
If only I could get some rain in my backyard, that'd be really nice. Hey, we talked about monsoon a little bit. And for folks that want to read up on the monsoon, the Tucson National Weather Service has a great section, kind of everything you ever wanted to know about a monsoon. And it's a long address, so I'll just give you the simple way. Go to Google Tucson NWS, and then you'll find that site. And scroll down the left side, you'll find monsoon information. Good stuff there if you want to learn about the monsoon.
And I just have it up on my computer screen here, and all kinds of stuff. The start dates. Mark Seeley would love this, by the way. I'm going to go turn this around. You can see my screen. Dew point data, monsoon rainfall. What is the monsoon?
Yes.
And the 2007 monsoon tracker. I got to click on that. Hang on.
Everybody wants to know when it's going to begin. Average start date in Tucson, July 3rd. They're just a little late this year.
Nice graphic, by the way.
Yeah.
Mark, check that out.
I'm going to look that up tonight.
I bet you will, too. All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground today. Thanks, Paul and Mark.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks to you for listening. Say, I did hear from some of you last week. Thank you for your feedback. I am so glad you're listening. Send us a note via the feedback form at minnesotapublicradio.org when you click on the Jet Streaming podcast. Jet Streaming is produced by Minnesota Public Radio. Julie Seiple's been a big help this week. I'm Kathy Werzer. Until next week, remember to keep your eyes on the sky.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side.